Thanks for joining us for another awesome message from C3 Church Toronto. Our heart is that these podcasts would be a tool that helps you connect to God. If you need more info on our church, check out our website at www.c3toronto.com. Now grab a coffee and prepare your heart for a powerful word from God.
We're in a very interesting season as a church. You hear it by the way that Sam has been preaching these last 2 weeks. Vision Builders feels like a page-turning season for this church. We've titled it Love Built This because we've been building this thing for 5.5 years now, 6 years now, and love has built this. Love is the very core of what we've built here, from mine and Sam's heart, from the team's heart, from God's heart. It's love that's built this thing. But it feels like we're in this season where it feels kind of like a page turn because we're going into a new season of building again and of new people picking up this burden to love and build with love. And so the last couple of weeks have been unbelievable. If you haven't been here for them, make sure you listen to the podcast. The way that Sam's been preaching about love and getting back to the very core of who we are, of what we're here for, what we're called to do, not letting any lies or anything come against it, but this is who we are. And it's been incredible. It's been calling us back to center, back to truth, back to who we are. And I am so excited for this season that we're entering into. If these last couple of weeks are anything to give us an indication, it's going to be amazing. And I do really encourage you to get to the Vision Builders dinner on Friday night. If you're not there, you will miss out. So I really do encourage you to get there. And I wanted to say, I know that Sam honored me, but I want to honor him as well because he speaks about love and he preaches about love, but he really lives love. And sometimes you may see this, I was joking actually to Amanda that the worship team today kind of looks like a Disney band, if you guys noticed. It was kind of like the perfect Disney princess from every different movie. They're just so beautiful, the girls. And then you had Landon in the middle as like the perfect Disney prince. He had, you know, like the perfect blonde hair. And I was thinking, I'm like, do you know what? I married a Disney prince. I did. But he's not anymore. He's transitioned into something even better. He's transitioned into what I would call a Disney dad. Now, a Disney dad, which if you think about it, think about the movies and think about the dads that you've seen in the Disney movies. They're always kind of got that like hairy beard kind of going on. They kind of got this like stern look in their face. But as you watch the movie, you get to see that this like sternness and this perhaps could be perceived as aggression, maybe, is actually from a core inside of them where they love their daughter or their son or their people in that movie so much that they would do absolutely anything they possibly can for them to have a great life, to love them, to propel them into their future. And so I love you, my Disney dad. You may come across as being a little bit aggressive at times, but I know that it comes from a heart of love. And you are honestly, you care for people the most out of anybody I've ever met in my entire life. And sometimes it doesn't come across that way because you might not say the kindest thing, but you always say the God thing in people's life. And I'm thankful for that. And I love that about you. I made him cry. Yes. Oh, love it. So love built this. So we have been speaking about love and been speaking about the core of this, but there's something inside of me with love built this where I want to speak about the building part. We can speak to love all day long and it is perfect and it is right to get the core right. But what are we going to do with the love? What are we going to do with this love that we experience from God? What are we going to do with this love to give out to people? How do we actually love on people? And we do it through building. We do it through, this message isn't just love. This message is love built this. Every single one of us is called to build something. There is some sort of innate thing in all of us about wanting to nurture life, build a family, build a career, build a house, take ground. It's something inside of us that I believe is put there from God. And I believe that every single one of us are called to build his kingdom here. We're called to build something of significance, something where God can move in this city, every single one of us. And so I wanted to speak today actually from Nehemiah. It's this great book in the Old Testament, and it's all about a man who builds a wall, which I'm not going to make any jokes about building walls, but it's a great book. It's a really good read. And so I was reading through it, and I'm probably not going to make too many actual clear points today, because this story, it's kind of like a journey, and I feel like our church relates to it perfectly at the moment. I feel like we can kind of journey along in this book with Nehemiah, and we can recognize the same threads of things that are happening in our own lives and in our own church. So I'm just probably going to run through it. I might harp on some points, I might not. So I'm going to start right in the beginning of Nehemiah. Do you guys have your Bibles? Yes? Good. If you don't, you can download YouVersion on your phone right now. Join in, highlight things. It's good. So my message today is called Building Walls and Gates. Building Walls and Gates. So the beginning of Nehemiah starts where he sees something that has happened and he gets a burden for it. It says in Nehemiah 1:3, they said to me, so he gets told something, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. If I can tell you one thing today, if there's one thing that you can take away from today, please know that you are a part of building something great and that your part matters and that there is a part that you can play in this story. So it starts with him hearing something. It starts with him hearing a cry. It starts with him hearing about people that have been in trouble and disgrace. And I love that this starts with a burden. Nehemiah didn't get a vision to build a wall for the sake of building a wall. The first thing he saw was burden. He saw heartbreak. He saw disgrace. He saw people displaced. And for us, Toronto is that. Ontario is that. Canada is that. We didn't come to this place and say, do you know what would be amazing? Let's build a church. We came to this place and we saw brokenness and we saw pain and we saw people not living the life that God had called them to live. We saw people hurting and we thought, what can be the answer to this? There has to be an answer, Jesus. And we cried out, and the answer is his church. And so we said, you know what? We see the pain. We see the burden. We're going to carry that burden. We're going to build a vision to help the burden. The vision doesn't come first. The burden comes first. And this church will always be a church that has a heart for people. We will never build it for the sake of building it, but we'll build it to create a place for people. And so everything starts with burden. So he sees the problem, he gets a heart for it, and then he says, where is it? He cries out to God, and he repents to God first. I love this. He repents. He turns to God and he says, I see this pain. What could I do to fix it? I'm sorry of what we have maybe not done in the past. And you know what? We're sorry of ways that perhaps we haven't helped people. But every day we are going to try and help people more and more and more. And then he says, so I'm sorry, Lord, let's do this. Let's build a wall and rebuild what's already there. He doesn't build a wall from scratch. Do you know that Toronto was once called Toronto the Good? That this city was a city filled with churches. And the reason I tell you is because churches are the house of God. Churches are a place of refuge. We can be Christians living in the city, and that is a beautiful thing. But without churches, without houses of God, there is no refuge for people. We need to build churches to create refuge, to create a place for people to come and be safe, to be protected. Walls are actually a good thing. They keep you protected from things. And so the first thing he does is he tells the king, and we're just going to keep jumping down. It's like in chapter 2, he tells the king, and then he goes out and he starts to scope out the land, just like we did in Toronto. He's like, okay, so let's actually see the state of this thing and see what we need to do to actually rebuild this and make this strong again. Then he says to them, he says, you see the trouble we are in. This is in verse 17. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Churches in this city that used to be here no longer exist. And that is sad. I hate that fact. I wish that this city could have been Toronto the Good and gone from Toronto the Good to Toronto the Great and been continued to be known as being the city for churches. That would have been a sensational thing. But unfortunately, that's not the case. But it doesn't end here. We have the opportunity to rebuild again. So come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and then we will no longer be in disgrace. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me, that this is a God thing, and what the king had said to me. And so they replied, let us start rebuilding. That was all they needed. They saw the burden. They saw the need. Let us start rebuilding. This is not something that, you know, just the team here are building. This is something for every single one of us. When we first started this thing, there was 8 of us. And it was beautiful. We, like, 8 of us were working hard, making it happen. And then there was a few more people. And it was like 15 of us. We were all working hard and making it happen. But now I look out across this room and it's not 8 of us anymore. There's like 1,500 of us that can put our hand to the plow and make a difference in this city. And you guys are the new 8. You are. You are the new 8. Don't disqualify yourself and think that you don't have what it takes. You do. So we jump down into chapter 3 and they start the building. Love this. They start building this wall. So it starts with the high priest and his fellow priests went to work. Sam and I will always build this thing first. We will always lead the way. We will never, ever ask you to do something that we're not prepared to do ourselves. We will go right at the front. We will take the biggest hits. We will work the hardest because we believe in this thing the most. And I think that's the way it should be. I think that's what we've called to do. It's what God's put in us to do. And then, so we start, and then the priests around us also go to work. We all lead. Pastor Jerry down here goes to work building this thing. Pastor Greg, who is preaching in our first service, goes to work building this thing. And I love it, but it doesn't just start there. It doesn't stop there. Then in verse 2, the men of Jericho built the adjoining section. And Zachar, by the way, there's a lot of names in this, so please don't diss me if I say any of them wrong. I will do my best. And then Zachar, son of Imri, built next to them. Then in verse 3, the fish gate was then rebuilt by the sons of Hasena. They built its beams and put its doors and bolts in place. Keep going, keep going, going. Then next section, next to him, Meshullam, son of Berechiah, the son of, I'm not going to be able to pronounce any of these. And next to him was Zadok, son of Bana, also made repairs. The next section was repaired by the men of Tekoa, but their nobles would not put their shoulders to the work under their supervisors. You guys will be building, and there'll be people that will decide not to build with you. And that's okay. There's always people that will decide not to join in. Then 6, the Jesana gate, or the old gate, was repaired by Joanna's son, Pasa, blah, 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 blah. Then next to them, and then next to them. And then in verse 8, it's Uzziel, son of Hara, one of the goldsmiths, repaired the next sections. Do you see where I'm going? Next to them, next to them, next to them. One of the goldsmiths repaired the next section. I'd love for a goldsmith to repair something. I would trust them. They kind of know what they're doing. They got some skills. They, you know, they're quite, they'll finesse over things. They'll build it right. There's people in this room that you have different skill sets to what you think build the church. But can I tell you that the skills that God has put in you are the exact skills that you need to build this church? And then next to them, I love this one, Hananiah, one of the perfume makers, made repairs next to that. I would probably trust a goldsmith to make repairs. I probably wouldn't trust a perfume maker to make repairs to something. I don't know. Is that just me? I would think that that person was way too creative and way too, you know, out there to think about how lumber would work in a building. And we have creative people in this church that will look at this and disqualify themselves and think, well, what I have, the video capabilities that I have, the photography skills that I have, they don't work in building a church. Can I tell you that they do? Every single skill set you have builds this thing. It advances the kingdom. It allows Jesus to connect with people. We were hearing a story in Huddle today of Tash Bone, who you probably seen on stage at different times. She's one of our amazing worship leaders. She reconnected with Jesus by seeing a billboard that our church put together on the side of the road. That wasn't done by a pastor. That was done by someone in the creative team. Did you know that somebody in the finance and admin team was the one that did negotiations with the billboards and made it happen financially? You might have financial skills in this place or administrative skills in this place. Whatever it is, there is a place for you here and you are called to build this thing. If you are sitting here right now, God has his hand on you to build something, to do something. Do not disqualify yourself. Keeps going on. And then in verse 9, I'm not going to be able to pronounce that one, Raphaiah, son of Hur, ruler of a half district of Jerusalem, repaired the next section. Ruler of a half district, somebody who is a king in their field, got their hands dirty and started building this wall because they believed in it. We have amazing business people in this church that you probably wouldn't know what they do behind the scenes. We have people that serve on our board. We have people who give incredible amounts. We have people who give advice and lead people well that you might never see up here on stage. But they're playing their part as rulers of a half district building the house of God. And then it keeps going next to him, next to him, next to him. And I love, and then in verse 12, this is what's so good about the Bible. In verse 12, it says, repaired the next section with the help of his daughters. Hello. Even the women are called to build this church. I don't care if people say that women aren't supposed to perhaps do stuff in church or whatever it is, but the Bible right here shows it. It doesn't discriminate. The daughters are right in there with it, getting dirty, getting it done, building this wall. We're all in this together. And then 13, the valley gate. And then 14, the dung gate. I would not want to have been building the dung gate. And it does mean what it means. It means the dung gate. And then 15, the fountain gate. And just keeps going next to him and next to him and next to him. And I love how Jesus purposely, in this word, it is written out by name who built this thing. Your part matters. Without you, something's missing. Your name matters. Your position matters. Your skill set matters. Every single person is written out here playing their part, building this. And that's exactly what this church is. Next to him, next to him, next to him, next to him. We have incredible people building this house. But I love that they're not just building a wall. That the biggest thing that they're building here, which you see the emphasis along the way, is gates. So walls are incredibly important. We talk a lot about, you know, tear down the walls of the church, get outside the four walls of the church. And the theology behind that is great and the heart behind that is great. But I actually have a passion to build up the walls of the church. Not because I want to segregate people, but I want to build the walls really far, really high, so that they can be a place of refuge for people. They can be a place where people come in and feel separated from what they're experiencing out there. They feel safe from the pain that they're experiencing outside the walls. They feel refuge. They feel joy. They feel love. They experience Jesus in a way that they don't experience outside of these four walls. But the important part of it is that there is many, many gates. That's what makes the walls good, is that there is many access points. Many, many access points. Not just one. There's like 14, I think. 10 gates here that it speaks to by name. And that's what we're called to do, church. We're called to build walls, and we're called to build gates. Gates. We don't just build gates for people to meet Jesus. We actually build gates for people to journey with Jesus. This church will forever have the biggest, widest, hugest, most inviting gate for people to meet Jesus and encounter Jesus, because that is the most important thing. That is the thing that we are most passionate about. But that is not the only gate that we are going to focus on. We are going to focus on the gates that lead you to journey with Jesus. Not just meet him, but to actually journey and walk life with him. I don't want to make this too much of a Bible college class, but I am going to quickly talk to you about what the gates mean, because I want you to see how, as a church, what we're building, and maybe see yourself in one of these gates. As I'm speaking out these gates, you may say, oh my goodness, that's my heart. I want to be able to help people in that way. And then you'll know where you can serve. You'll know where your part is. You'll know where your skill set works. So the first gate that you see in verse 1 is the sheep gate. This is lost sheep coming home. This is people meeting Jesus for the first time, for experiencing him and realizing, oh my goodness, Jesus is amazing. And that's our Sundays. That is our Sunday services. That's our Alpha Connect groups. We run Alpha Connect groups in this church, and they are successful and incredible groups where people get to ask questions because they're trying to figure it all out, and they're amazing. The second one is the fish gate. Now, the fish gate, I think, is important because the first one is when people are coming in. The fish gate is the being sent out. It's the being going out to find the people to bring them in. This is us inviting our friends. This is us doing our part to show people Jesus. This is our Love Toronto events, is the fish gate of our church. Inviting our friends to church, inviting them to events. When we do events, we're not an event-driven church, but my goodness, we will have an event gate. We will have her events for places for you to be able to bring people to. Have our men's brekkie events where you can bring your man dude friends to and wrestle each other and they can meet Jesus. It's great. Wrestle for Jesus. Then the third gate. So we've allowed people in. We've sent people out. And then the third gate is called the Jesana gate, I think is how you pronounce it. It means the old gate. And the old gate is actually speaking to ancient truths. So this is the gate where we will preach truth that is countercultural to what you've heard out there. This is the gate of mindset shifting. This is the gate of lives aligning to Jesus. This is the gate of people actually saying, do you know what? I'm not just adding Jesus into my life. I am aligning with his ancient truths and walking towards him. And this gate is so important to us. The biggest way that we do this is through our preaching. You'll hear we're very, very sacred about who gets up on this platform, because we do not want you to be taught things that aren't truth. Truth is incredibly important to us. The fourth one is the valley gate. Ooh, this one's a fun one. This is in verse 13. This is one that a lot of people get stuck in. The valley gate. Do you know that this is the hard times? This is the hard times of journeying with Jesus. This is the footprints in the sand. Has anyone seen that footprints in the sand poem? Where it's like, you know, during my hardest times, there was only one set of footprints. And the beautiful part is that Jesus said, in those times, that's when I carried you. It's a beautiful, kind of a cheesy Christian poem, which was on the back of a lot of toilets growing up. And so I read it a lot. Yeah, there's a few other kids that grew up Christian that saw that poem. And this is the valley. This is a very real part of life. And we as a church will never stop that valley process from happening because we know that that's where life change happens. You are going to experience valleys in this church. You are going to walk through the valley gate in this church. And I am sorry, and I wish, as a mother's heart, I wish that I could stop that from happening. But I know that on the other side of that valley gate is your breakthrough. Is your freedom, is your knowing that you can trust 100% entirely on Jesus. That is the gate where dependence comes. That is the gate where we let go of ourselves. And the biggest way that we do that in this church is through teams. You will experience the valley gate through teams, likely. But be encouraged, because that gate just leads to another gate. It's not the end. It might feel like forever, but it's not the end. The next gate is the dung gate, which I was telling you about in verse 14. Do you know at the end of the valley, there's like a big pile of dung, normally. And you get to that point and you're like, what the heck, Jesus? But do you know what it is? It's actually Him clearing all the dung out of our own life. The valley actually causes us, everything that's inside of us, to rise to the surface, to come out of our life. And we finally then stand on the other side of it and we're like, oh, that's all that stuff. That's what you wanted gone from my life. All that resentment, all that fear, all that hurt, that's what you wanted gone. Okay. Well, I'm okay that I walked through that valley, and I'm okay that now that dung is a gate and I've walked through it and it's behind me. The dung gate always gets dealt with in teams. And also on altar calls. We will always be a church that provides an opportunity for you to experience Jesus and have Him bring stuff to the surface. There is nothing like the Holy Spirit to actually show us what we need to change in our lives. The sixth one is the fountain gate. I know I said I wasn't going to get too teachy, but I've kind of gone there anyway. The fountain gate, which is verse 15. The fountain speaks of the fresh outpouring of His Spirit, streams of living water. Do you know that I don't believe that you can experience the Holy Spirit to such an extent until you clear out some of the stuff in yourself, until you actually allow Him to work in those things that we're trying to hold on to. And so this fountain gate, this spiritual gate, is one that we will always, always have in this church. Maybe you're called to build that gate. Maybe that's something that you're passionate about. I want people to experience the Holy Spirit. Well, perhaps that gate, the fountain gate, is your point that you're called to build. That's your next to Him spot. The fountain gate, one of the main places is All In. All In Nights, that is a fountain gate. It really is. It is where the outpouring of His Spirit is, and it's amazing. Number seven, the water gate. This is in verse 26. So this kind of works hand in hand with the fountain gate, but what the water gate actually speaks to is the cleansing of the Word. And so it speaks to, we have this incredible experience with God in the fountain gate, and then this Word washes through us with truth. With new beliefs that we can hold firm to, new teachings that we can hold on to. This is the water gate. And the water gate happens through connect groups. That's where you get to wash each other with the Word. It's where we get to read the Word with each other. It happens in your daily devotions in the morning, at night, whenever you do it. It happens with you talking with people. It also happens through our internship. Our interns are seriously watered with the Word, maybe even drowned with it sometimes. But anyway, then there's the horse gate. Horse gate is in verse 28. And horses speak of warfare. So you've done this journey through all of these gates. You haven't just met Jesus, but you've journeyed with Jesus through some stuff. Gotten stronger, gotten cleaner some stuff, gotten freer. And then there's the horse gate, which is warfare. This is God showing us that when we are free, when we are functioning in our calling and our identity, that there is war that comes against us. There is opposition that comes against us. And you might be feeling that right now. You might be feeling like you're in that gate and you're like, why does everything feel like it's coming against me? Be encouraged, because there's warfare. You can pray into it. You can fight against it. Our horse gate is our prayer meetings on Thursday night. It is our huddles, our team huddles down here before service starts. It's prayer and fasting in January. Our horse gate is some of the stuff that you'd probably avoid, because it's war, it's work, it's fight, but it's who we are. And then the last two gates, the east gate in verse 29, which speaks of Jesus' return. And so that speaks to just keeping our eyes on eternity and knowing that that is always the end prize. That is always the end goal. That we always fix our eyes on Jesus. That we don't fix our eyes on ourselves or our circumstances, but Jesus is the end gate. And then the very last one is the inspection gate. And that just speaks of eternity, of going to heaven and Jesus saying, you know, well done, good and faithful servant, or what did you do? And that's a really heavy thing to say, but it's good to just be aware that that is the case, that eternity is in the mix with this. And then at the very, very end, it says, it all ties back around into a circle, and it ties back to the sheep gate. It ties back to Jesus. This church will forever build walls for refuge, forever build gates for people to journey with Jesus. And we will always keep that sheep gate, that one where people meet him, the biggest, the brightest, the most well-lit, the most welcoming, the most open gate possible. Because Jesus is all that matters. It will never be flashy lights of us. It will forever be pointed to Jesus, forever and ever. This church is going to live past Sam and I. It's going to live past our children. The goal and the way that we are building this thing is that it is going to be known hundreds of years from now. That is the impact that we want to have in this city. That is the impact we want to have in Ontario. Do you know what? These gates don't just happen here. We need these gates and these walls all across Ontario, all across Canada. Toronto doesn't just need it. Everybody needs it. Every single city filled with churches, with walls that are so high that when people come through those gates, they feel like nothing can touch them. That is our desire. A place where you cannot feel anything but the presence of God, that the pain disappears, that the heartache disappears, because we're journeying with Jesus. And so that's what Vision Builders is all about. We can't do it without love. We need love. Love builds it. But what does love do? Does it build it, or does it just sit around? We're a church that are on mission, and we are going to build this thing. And I encourage you, we're going to do it together. We're going to be next to him and next to him and next to him and next to him. We're going to look out across 10 years from now and see the next to him and next to him and smile at each other. Remember those days? Even greater days are ahead. So if you feel like you can't find that place of refuge, that you haven't felt that experience of Jesus, that you feel hurt, broken, like life has just taken its toll on you, can I let you know that you're in good company here? That this church isn't filled with perfect Christians that have it all together, but it's filled with people that are seeking Jesus. That's all it is. Sam says it like this, that Christianity is just one beggar showing another beggar where he found bread. That's all we're doing. We've found Jesus, and he's the most incredible, most amazing thing that we could have ever found. And we want you to find the same thing, because it's the only thing that has brought life into our world. And so I'm just going to ask everybody in this room, if you close your eyes, bow your heads right now, I'm going to give you a moment to invite Jesus into your heart, because that's who it's all about. That is what this thing is all about. And so maybe as I was speaking, you were feeling a bit of like a heart tug going, I don't know what she's talking about, but I kind of like this Jesus guy. Can I encourage you to raise your hand? Or maybe you've been and walked with Jesus before and you want to come back to Jesus. Now is the moment where you can raise your hand and I can say a prayer with you, and we can start that journey with Jesus.